Hello, and thanks for listening to JoJo's Bizarre Podcast. My name is Mark DeVries. I am joined, as always, by and always and forever, by
forever.
Miles Ma. Hi, Miles.
Hi.
And I'm also joined by Jackie Jimenez.
Hi.
Hi, Jackie.
Me and Jackie are drinking White Claw.
Yeah.
Man, and we're sponsored by them. That's why we're saying it out loud.
Ain't no law when you're drinking the claw.
Mm. Is that a phrase?
I heard someone at work say it.
There's no way that's their slogan.
It would be weird for them.
We're a podcast that talks about JoJo's Bizarre Adventure in 2019 and before. Now we talk about alcoholic seltzer. We've been branching out into other anime, and this week we watched an old favorite, the anime psychological thriller Perfect Blue from 1997.
It is a movie.
Is this an old favorite of yours?
Oh, yeah.
Mark really likes this movie.
Have you seen it before, Jackie?
I
saw it once before after Mark wouldn't shut up about how...
What the fuck?
How Black Swan was a ripoff of this or whatever.
Because it is.
And I'm like, Mark, I still like Black Swan and this movie is cool, but they're not that similar.
Oh, they're very similar.
No, they're not.
Everybody knows
well,
that.
Well, no, I don't know. I don't know.
It's from...
Like, okay, well, similar is one thing. Jackie, inspiration
let's
is one thing.
Wait.
But a ripoff... Anyway. That's all. Right. Let me finish my sentence. Okay, that's it.
Okay. I thought you were going to go into a tirade.
That was it. I just wanted to finish that thought.
Perfect Blue is a movie by Satoshi Kon, who also did Paprika, perhaps more known for that. And the connection, by the way, to JoJo is that he directed a few episodes of the OVA, you know, where Dio is making that politician drive him in Egypt and shit, and he just runs over a bunch of people.
That's cool.
But before we get into breaking down Perfect Blue, we should check in to Correspondence Corner. No, we should put on a correspondence concert.
Mm.
How was that?
Mm. Ooh.
Or a live drama play based on the correspondence.
Yeah, we should put on a serial about serial murderers of our emails. This is a corner where we check in with our email, which you can write to, which is jojosbizarrepod@gmail.com. And we'll check in with our patrons because we have a Patreon now. I don't know the URL for it, but I am pretty sure if you look up JoJo's Bizarre Podcast on the Patreon, you'll find us.
Sign up at this website that we don't know.
And
look for us on Patreon.
I want to say thanks to our very first two patrons,
ooh,
Chad and Christian.
Who was first?
I'm not going to reveal that.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
They're on the $3 tier, so we will read their names, and we just did.
Thank you, Chad and Christian.
Keep in mind, there's also a $1 tier, which you should sign up for because it's a dollar. And then any like updates about it or statements from your credit card, you should just mark as spam and just forget about it. And then you
that's
just,
what you do.
You'll never know that you're missing that dollar. And we reap the sweet benefits.
PSA, look through every once in a while your bank statements and make sure you're not accidentally recurringly paying. Is that a word? Reoccurring? I don't know.
Reoccurring?
Do you have any reoccurring payments for shit that you forgot about.
Yeah.
Thanks for signing up.
Except for our Patreon.
Yeah, you can forget about us, though.
Yeah.
Because we were doing this for $0.
Well, yeah. For negative dollars.
For negative dollars.
The goal here is to break even on SoundCloud Pro payments, even though they've erased 4 episodes, and I am in talks with SoundCloud support that are not going well. It's not actually their fault. The episodes are still on soundcloud.com/jjbpod, but if you're using a podcatcher like iTunes or whatever, you'll be missing episodes 49, 151, 2, and 3, but they're on SoundCloud.
Readers, write in if you know a better podcast host.
Do we have the raw files? Maybe if you subscribe, we'll just like send you the fucking files.
Yeah. Subscribe to our $20 tier. Which is a one-time payment. Just sign up and cancel, and we'll watch whatever anime you tell us to.
One of our tiers should be you get the unedited pod.
The unedited pod?
You hear the terrible things that you have to edit out.
Where we talk about hometown gossip when we break to use the bathroom or whatever.
We dox ourselves.
Yeah.
Listeners, if you have ideas for Patreon tiers, let us know, because we're having a hard time coming up with ideas.
I feel great about what we have.
But the $20 one is real. You can... Just for one time, like subscribe and then cancel, and like tell us what anime you want us to watch, and we'll watch it. We have to do it.
Oh, you don't have to put this in, but we should just set up a PayPal instead.
Why?
Rather than having people sign up and then cancel.
I like the recurring because I am paying recurringly.
Well, what if somebody
on the SoundCloud? I thought about doing like a Ko-fi or whatever. No, I mean
for the $20 tier anyway. If it's just a one time deal.
What if somebody wants to just tell us every month what we should watch?
Maybe.
And just control the pod.
Well, they control one episode of a podcast.
What if they were just like, I want you to watch Mob Psycho, and then
every month,
I want you to watch Mob Psycho some more episodes.
That'd be fine. Then we would just be like, as you guys know, it's the 21st, and that means we're watching more Mob Psycho.
And that means this person is funding our SoundCloud and Crunchyroll. But then the thing is, if more than like three or four people do that, then we can't watch anything we want. we're like slaves to these.
We got
to
give the people what they want.
And then you all get fucking.
But then if that happens,
when JoJo comes back too. We kick you all off.
I think if that happens though, like this is an impossible scenario because no one is going to do this. Nobody likes us that much.
Nobody likes us.
But if that did happen, then we would just increase the price. So if there's like five people a month giving us $20.
What are we, Uber? We're just surge pricing.
Supply and demand, baby.
Nah, fuck that. So that is patreon.com/jjbpod, it turns out. Also, we're talking about what to cover next, and Jackie and I had a productive discussion. We kept Miles out of it. We were talking about the next series we cover, we should just do some classic anime that everyone knows, or regardless, we should do more than like three episodes crammed into one podcast episode. We should do like multiple pods in a row of a few episodes.
We got time to kill.
Starting from the start, and instead of trying to jump around and get a feel for the whole thing, let us know, listeners, if you like that or if you prefer it to be more like more variety, less deep coverage.
Yeah.
All right, let's go on to the emails. This one is from my mom. No, I'm kidding.
Does your mom ever email you?
Not about the podcast, but yeah.
A couple of weeks ago, she emailed about the movie The Irishman, and it was great.
Oh yeah, where she was like, Robert De Niro, he ain't Irish. I was like, yeah, he was Irish in Goodfellas too, but like whatever.
My dad has the same opinion.
Yeah,
he's very adamant about it.
in The Irishman.
Yeah, he's like, why De Niro?
Does he ever say that about people like from his background as well in movies?
No, it has not come up in convo. He was especially mad about De Niro being cast as an Irishman.
That's weird.
Did he have like a suggestion?
No, he did not have a suggestion.
Well, that's the thing. There's no Irish actors.
He's over here like, everybody knows he's Italian-American.
Who's an Irish actor?
Donald Gleason. What if they just put Donald Gleason in and they gave him old makeup?
Oh, yeah, it has to be an old person, right?
Well, no, but that's the thing is a lot of what they used to do, what looks more convincing to me, you take a young person and you put old on them.
Liam Neeson.
The guy who plays McNulty.
Liam Neeson could do it.
The guy who plays McNulty.
Is he Irish?
Yeah.
Dominic whatever.
Super Irish McIrish.
Dominic DeCmulty. Dominic DeCoco. I don't know what that has to do. Our first email is from, how do you sign your name? Gray. And it goes like this. It's called A Long Time Coming. Hey, crew. Gray here, emailing from Illinois. Just wanted to say congratulations on opening.
Oh, never mind. He's English. I was thinking of, who's the guy who's the mayor? Mayor, the...
Carchetti.
That's
also known as Littlefinger.
He's Irish.
Just wanted to say congratulations on opening the Patreon. You guys definitely...
Thank you.
You guys definitely deserve it after doing this for a long time, and I can't wait to see the future of this absolutely wonderful podcast. P.S. Horny for burgers.
What is that a reference to?
I don't know.
I'm kind of horny for burgers.
Maybe it's just honesty. They just want burgers.
Yeah, maybe.
They want to sleep with a burger.
Thank you, Gray.
Thank you.
Again, this is jojosbizarrepod@gmail.com. You knew that. Who wants to read this next one? It's too long for me.
I'll do it. This next email. Is from Talia the Strange. Hey, I already mentioned this to Mark, not with a K, but I figured I'd send an email just to bring the Miles the Daddy-O and Sailor Scout the Jackie in on it, but I recommend Dorohedoro. It comes out today, January 12, in Japan. Not sure which streaming service is going to have it, But even if no streaming service has it in English, I'm sure you all know how to get it. What's that supposed to mean?
What are you talking about?
Anyway, it's based on a manga written by a lady mangaka by the name of Kyu Hayashida, who was an assistant on the manga Blame. Dorehodoro is literally one of my favorites of all times. Yes, plural. It's my favorite in multiple timelines. It's about a dude with a lizard head who puts people into his head and another head inside the lizard head and then kills people.
I like this.
In all honesty, it's hard to describe the plot because the less you know about it, the better.
It sounds like King Crimson.
Sounds like Talia wrote this.
Here are the trailers and the opening, though I recommend just watching the opening.
I'm not going to do that.
It will tell you nothing and everything. And in terms of the bizarre, this manga gets fucking weird. And then there's some YouTube links, which I will not read.
We're not going to look at them.
Postscript: every time I close my eyes, I imagine a world that does not feel ashamed of its horniness, and I weep for all that could have been.
Nice. I think that's a Nine Inch Nails reference there in your signature, with all that could have been in caps. I think it's supposed to be and all that could have been, though.
Does Nine Inch Nails lament the lack of horniness in the world?
Let's, you know, I thought it was about romance, but now that you say that, I think that is what Ron Zertner is talking about.
Let's take a moment of silence for the horniness in the world.
Couldn't even do it.
That was a moment.
That was a moment.
It was a moment. Horniness is having a moment right now.
I think you're right, actually.
Okay. Should we break a take or are we good to go?
I think whatever. Let's go.
LFG.
Let's fucking go. Let me open my notes though.
Okay, so to start, ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about Perfect Blue. It is an anime movie. It is a psychological thriller. It is dark. It is mature. There is anime nudity.
Lots of it.
Yes.
And lots of blood.
Yes. So, well, that's a spoiler. Well, maybe. I don't know.
What? You thought it would have been Perfect Red, and then you would be like, oh, yeah, of course, blood's in it.
Well, you don't know what kind of things happen in this movie.
You don't
movie,
know what
maybe.
Color blood it is.
So, listeners, we are going to try to not spoil it for a little bit, and then we're going to say, okay, spoilers are coming, and then if you really care, then you can shut off this podcast episode and stop listening. But we can just give kind of a general, like, what is the vibe of this movie? What are the themes? And like, if you might like it, but I recommend it. I think I don't know if Miles liked it, but
it's available. Like you have to purchase it. You can rent it for a few bucks on like Google, YouTube, Amazon, Apple. And apparently it is streamable with subtitles on a service called Hoopla.
Hoopla.
I feel like I've mentioned this, that is what Funky Kong yells when he jumps in Donkey Kong 64.
What is Funky Kong's relation to Donkey?
Is he the one that, what does he
he's
do?
He's probably adopted.
Does he like beatbox or something? What does he do?
He's got stretchy arms.
So what, he does turntables?
I feel like he's got weird taste. I think he does have turntables.
Okay. Funky Kong.
I forget what the DK rap says about him. I really should have that memorized. It feels like it would be in character for me.
I just looked him up. He wears jorts. So
I thought he has overalls.
He's wearing jorts in these pictures.
That's fucking sweet.
Jorts and a belt. Weird combo.
Yeah. So yeah, as stated earlier, Perfect Blue is from 97, the year I think most things in the 90s happened.
Oh.
And it is about a pop idol, which is like a pretty uniquely Japanese thing, I think.
We have pop stars.
Yeah, but the fact that they use the word idol, I think, is indicative of how much they really let the public worship them. Because it's like, I don't know, I'm sure we have obsessive fans here of people from, you know, boy bands and girl bands back in the day, maybe.
Mm-hmm. I think increasingly we do.
Really?
I mean, like, people obsessed over the Beatles, people, like, that dude, like, was obsessed with Jodie Foster, like, and they make a reference to Jodie Foster in this movie.
That's the fan, that's not the industry. Like, the industry in Japan, it's like, you go to meet and greets with these people.
Yeah, they had that.
And you wait online to shake their hand once.
They had that in the 90s, yeah.
Okay.
They absolutely had that.
Like mall stars.
Yeah, you could right now pay extra.
You're a mall star.
You could right now, like, pay extra to go backstage and hang out with Beyonce or whatever, but that's like,
that's not true.
Yeah, you absolutely can. The VIP package though is like $5,000 or something.
I guess, but like, don't people trade photos and shit like that in the idol world?
I don't know.
I traded fucking lollipops for the Spice Girls. The Spice Girls had lollipops, and we traded the lollipop wrapping for the Spice Girls.
Did the scary one taste like your throat was closing up and you were gonna die? And you were like, "That's scary, Spice."
No.
Maybe the distinction is there's like more idols in Japan. Like it's a more commonplace thing to become an idol. Like it's like being a middle manager.
There's an industry more so than. Yeah.
Maybe. There certainly was an industry. Like NSYNC and Backstreet Boys, I think, were made by the same dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Spice Girls were also, like, put together by someone.
Yeah, they all are, really.
Britney Spears, too, and I think Christina Aguilera, too. They were put together. Oh, Pink is another one.
Well, yeah, the individuals I understand, but, like, the term band...
Taylor Swift.
To me, it's usually, like, I think of people playing instruments and then hiring each other and, like, being a project together. And then it's like so funny that the boy band or girl band is just like, yeah, we cast these people basically.
Or pop stars.
I think the first one was the Monkees.
Hey. We're the Monkees. Also, this podcast was put together by an unseen rich man.
Yeah.
they who gives us no money.
They scoured the country to find us.
They really fucked up.
We auditioned for these roles.
Yeah. Now, Miles, sing your theme song.
Hey, I'm a monkey.
I was hoping you'd go with Miles.
Hey, I'm a Miles.
The Monkeys have a song, don't they?
That's what he's doing.
Yeah. Hey, we're the Monkeys.
They also have Ruby Tuesday.
Around. That's the Rolling Stones.
Ruby Tuesday?
Yeah. You're thinking of Daydream Believer and
you're right.
Homecoming Queen.
I don't know. In the 60s, they just put words together.
That's true. Thanks, right? Bob Dylan.
Me. And it's interesting, in this movie they mention like the decline of the idol industry or the decline of the idol phenomenon, and I don't know if that's really true in Japan, but I do know right now what's big are these like gigantic fucking idol groups
where it's like 30 people,
right? AKB, which is mentioned in Tara's House.
It stands for America, Camerica, Bamerica.
Okay, you couldn't do any other countries?
That's what it's called.
Oh, okay. That like AKB has like multiple divisions of pop idols.
They're a conglomerate. They're like Nabisco.
Right. They're multinational. Mm-hmm. They're like, here's the Filipino AKB. Here's the Chinese AKB. They're not allowed on the internet. And so I wonder if that's kind of the evolution, you know, like instead of these smaller girl groups, they were like, we need to hit as many, you know, horny kids as possible. Let's just have 40 girls in.
Kids are horny.
And I guess with the internet, you have more angles that people can approach.
Yeah.
Well, everyone picks their favorite, you know, like it is like the Spice Girls, I think, or the Backstreet Boys. Like, I don't know, you pick your favorite one and you're like, that's me or that's my girlfriend or whatever.
It's interesting watching this movie today because it's about like, part of it is about like toxic fandom.
Oh, yeah.
And like that has only gotten worse.
Yep.
Yeah. By the way, we should say that she's a pop idol, and this is just like the back of the box kind of summary I'm going for here, and she decides to move on in her career and become an actress, and the movie is about how she kind of deals with that internally and how the fandom reacts and
people around her. Also,
and it's a little bit surreal too.
Yeah, it blends like reality and the
it's
drama,
very psychological.
It blends reality and like kind of her dreams or her daydreams and
she's working on.
The drama that she's in. It kind of blends in. It's hard to tell sometimes what is real, what's a dream, and what is she acting in, that kind of thing. And it like blends together. So some people in her real life might show up in the drama, but that's like kind of in her head maybe, or it's just what's shown to us. It's like, it's cool.
Yeah, you don't know.
But it's not that hard to follow.
There's
though.
Some really cool like editing things in this anime that are like, I really feel, apparently this was supposed to be live action. I haven't verified that.
Oh.
And then a bunch of money got pulled out and they were like, all right, let's make an anime out of it. And it doesn't feel like an anime to me.
No.
Like all of the acting and such feels pretty realistic and subtle.
At one point they show a picture of like an anime and it looks like so exaggerated.
It's so fucked up, right? Because it looks like, it's like if you saw a live action movie and then they took a person and like squished their head and like enlarged their eyes. It was really unsettling for me.
Yeah.
The editing is very disorienting though. And it's a big part of the movie.
Yeah. I mean, I loved it how she'll be like acting in one scene and then her body will like swing up and then suddenly it's like, oh, we're in a daydream, or maybe we're in reality, or whatever.
I think I would have been even more disturbed if it was live action. Or maybe not.
I think it would have been better if it was live action.
No, I disagree. So? There's aspects of this, like, it's easier to, I think, blur the line in animation. You know, like,
I don't think so.
There's some of the things in here that happen that are like a little fantastic, and you're kind of like, could that really happen? And then in the live action, I feel like, I don't know, I feel like they would do CG and splice in together stuff, and you'd be able to see the seams. But maybe I'm just not talented enough to imagine something good.
Hey, come on.
The only person that I could think of directing this sort of thing, and I'm not like the most steeped in Japanese cinema or whatever, but it's maybe someone like Shiro Sagisu, who did I think that's the musician for Eva. No, fucking what's his name? The guy who did Suicide Circle.
Oh,
Shion Sono.
We should watch that for the pod.
Suicide Circle is
it's not an anime.
It just feels tonally similar, and it's like sort of a critique, an extremely dark critique of contemporary Japanese culture. You know, people be killing themselves, and just people are assholes and sad, and yet there's like a contrast with that sort of happy pop sheen to it. It makes even less sense, I'll say that, though. Suicide Circle is just like a bunch of fucked up vignettes, but I'm here for it.
I like it.
And I like it.
Mm-hmm.
Because Dead.
Yes.
That's a song in the soundtrack.
Oh, I think we should start doing movies. I would love to do Survive Style 5 and Suicide Circle on this pod.
I'm glad you finished that. You didn't just say, I want to do suicide.
No.
Hey, come on. We can't do
live suicide on the podcast.
I don't want to do
that's
that.
That's a new Patreon tier.
How much does it cost?
$100.
No.
And we'll
oh my God, we'll kill ourselves on the pod? No.
No. Love to see you try.
Too high?
That's right. Yeah, no one wants to pay that, and I want this to happen.
Okay, should we go into spoiler territory now?
I'm fine with that.
Okay, listeners, I hope we have convinced you to try this movie. It's good. You should watch. Miles, did you like it? Did you like it, Miles?
I liked it. I don't know how much I have to say about it because it just freaked me out a lot.
Okay, Miles is freaked out.
Good. It freaked me out.
Mark really likes
it. It's pretty spooky. The music is awesome, and I love that this is spoiler free. I love that there's a scene with like a fax machine printer, and that kind of blends its printing sound because it's very retro, kind of blends into the soundtrack. It kind of becomes the music.
Great sound design.
For sure.
I loved it.
So good sound.
Anyways, yeah, pause
this. It's bizarre.
Pause this. Go watch the movie and then
watch it.
Don't listen to any other podcasts. Come right back here.
Come right back to us.
And listen.
We'll be waiting here for you. Bye. No, we're still here. Okay, everybody else, they're gone.
Hi.
Now
how
we can
are
talk.
You? Let's talk about the people who left.
Now let's talk shit.
Look at these fucking losers who can't even afford $4.
Okay, guys, the first thing I want to say about this.
Sorry, I mean $4 to rent the movie, not to contribute to our Patreon. You're under no obligation.
The first thing I want to say about this is, what if this is what happens to us on the podcast?
Oh my God.
What if someone starts a blog about our podcast?
Oh no, JoJo's Bizarre Blogcast?
Yes,
or
yes.
It's just called Mark and Jackie's Apartment.
And then people don't really like, yeah, exactly. And then people don't really like how we're that we're not talking about JoJo anymore.
Oh my God.
So they murder us.
But unlike Cham, we're like literally out of stuff to do. And they're like, read the comic, read Steel Ball Run. It's like, we don't want to
do it. We want to become actresses.
And we get slowly murdered by stans that our listeners have.
Of all of our listeners, who's the most likely to murder us?
Well, I'm not going to say that out loud.
I know.
But it's me. It's my mother.
That's a new tier of our Patreon.
Yeah.
Listeners, write
you
in.
Get to murder us.
Write in if you would murder us, and then we won't read your emails ever again.
Yeah, we'll call the fucking keisatsu on you.
What does keisatsu mean?
Police.
Oh.
But if you contribute enough to our Patreon, you can murder us.
No.
No.
It's not true.
Murder us, daddy.
But yeah, by the way, we're 18% on way to the goal, which is to break even on monthly expenses.
We're doing it. What a low goal.
I rounded up a little bit to include Miles' gas money also.
Aww.
I feel like that's probably a...
You can reimburse Miles. Oh, wait, it should
also...
small
expense.
Because sometimes we order food right before potting, and we wouldn't be
gonna
doing that.
Gonna raise that bar. No longer 18%. Yes, we would be. What are you talking about? We love ordering Thai food.
That's true. The price of the average price of Thai food factored into how many times do we do this podcast a month?
Right. We've spent $4,000 on Thai food, it turns out.
What?
So yeah, the movie is about she turns into an actress. That sounds like she transforms. She decides to start acting.
She's in a pop group called Cham.
With good Cham. Songs. I like those songs.
You like
they
them?
Sound like what Shinji listens to on his little tape player.
You think so?
Yeah. What if there's a connection? She leaves it, and she leaves right at a moment when there's like a concert where there's like a hardcore stalker there who looks very unsettling.
We don't really know that he's a stalker yet. He's just a weird looking guy because his face
is
asymmetrical. So
but
we're
do
just,
learn.
Yeah,
his face is asymmetrical, and he has like I think like a translucent sort of cornea because his pupils aren't very pronounced.
Yeah.
So sometimes it looks like he has no eyes.
Do you think he has bad eyes? Do you think he's been using clear eyes too much?
His eyes are similar to Jay Guile in JoJo.
Ew.
But he does have a right and a left hand, so he's better off in that department. So like, and I love how realistic that is. Like, she's on the mic trying to talk, and then you just hear like people in the crowd like fighting and stuff, and it feels like something that could really happen. And it is also it like immediately breaks the like happy-go-lucky, sort of mood that their dance performance is.
Also, is this typical? The entire audience were like grown men. Is that normal for like pop groups? Because I would have thought it would have been a mixture of young girls and
their parents and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
You might be right. I was looking for kids too in the audience.
I didn't see any girls.
Maybe there's some groups though where that is like how it skews, or maybe it depends on where you're performing, you know, what time. Apparently, according to IMDb trivia, the most trustworthy name in news, the girls dancing, they're all out of sync, and that's intentional.
Oh, interesting.
Either just for realism's sake or to show that she's sort of out of step with them.
It's symbolic.
Yeah, I mean, this movie's heavy on symbolism.
It's a symbol. And not like the part of the drum. That's not what I'm talking about.
That's a different
about.
Kind of symbol.
Do you think there's a belief out there that just worships like that piece of metal that's on the drum kit?
Symbolism.
What is its core tenet?
It's psst.
Oh my God.
What is the purpose of the very opening scene where there's like Power Rangers fighting?
I don't know.
What was that all about?
It felt very different from everything
else
that was
happening.
Well,
I think it also kind of explains her scale as a pop star because she's...
Right. She's janky.
She's a pop idol, but she's not like the biggest pop idol in the world. And so I think it's like a combination event.
Yeah.
Right. Because then after we see that, like we see like people out in the street talking about different comics and people.
Yeah.
And stuff
also,
like that.
Do they say transform in this? Because they're sort of based on Power Rangers or the Super Sentai Rangers. There's a whole genre in Japan of people that transform. And so Mima in this movie sort of transforms
into a serious actress.
Yeah. She has kind of a different like suit, a different armor that she puts on.
Mm-hmm.
And we certainly use clothing in this movie to represent which Mima we're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
That is my answer that I definitely didn't think up now.
Pretty good.
Pretty good, right?
Pretty good for a
Did Jackie believe
out.
It?
Let's see. I'm reading her face.
She shrugged like, man, why not? Yeah.
So she becomes an actress. So she's playing another role in her life and she's playing another role professionally, which they play with a lot in the movie. Because like there are murders happening around her, but there are murders happening in the TV show.
Yeah, because she gets on to like a murder show.
Yeah.
By the way, can I just say, I don't know if it's the first creepy scene.
Yeah, you can say.
I'm proving it to myself right now. That when she's reading the blog about her life, and I knew it was going
to
happen.
So she finds out very early on that someone started a blog about her life, and it's kind of creepy.
It's called Mima's Room, and she gets fan mail that's like, I love looking at Mima's room, which is a really creepy double meaning already.
Right. So she gets, so when she's leaving her last performance, her final performance, someone hands her a letter And in it says, I love looking at Mima's room, and it has a URL. And also someone screams it from the audience. So I think, like, people think that, well, I mean, we find out what it is, but the fans must think that that's really her, right? Right,
they do.
Right, it's because it's called Mima's blog, and it does depict things that are happening in her life accurately.
Yeah.
What surprised me, though, is the fact that in the beginning, they're like, the first post she reads or whatever is, like, kind of general about her. But even still, it felt, like, creepy, and she is okay with it. That's what I thought was mm-hmm. weird. And then she becomes unokay with it when she keeps reading the blog, and it gets really specific and detailed.
Yeah, it knows, like, what brand of milk she buys. It knows, like, how she steps into the right. subway.
Right, well, no, that's the thing. When they mention, like, starting on the right foot or the left foot, she laughs that off. So I'm like, is that a common thing in Japan?
Like, maybe she's like, oh, this person knows me well. So it might have been something she said in an interview. It might have been, or just, like, the type of her personality. It might be a common superstition, you know? And so maybe people know that she's superstitious. You know, some, like, that I can see being like, oh, that's a good guess, you know?
Right, okay.
Then, like, it gets so specific that it's like, okay, somebody is watching me.
Yeah, I always feel like that. Yeah, it gets really specific, and it's about her starting to be an actress. And then, is it the first post where it has a recording of her?
Yes.
Saying, who are you?
Yeah, because it's her first line in the TV show.
It's her only line.
In that one episode, yeah.
That when she first goes to deliver, she's practicing it a lot. And I don't know about you guys, but I get a sense of anxiety, not just from her, but also from, I don't know, just the set. It seems so big, and they're like, all right, we're ready for you.
Mm-hmm.
And her manager and agent are there. But as she goes to read the line, we hear a bang. And it turns out there was a fan letter that had a small bomb in it.
A tiny little bomb.
A cute, adorable little chibi bomb.
Guys, it was so cute.
You have to see this bomb. And it injured her manager.
His hands only. Well, he passed out.
Oh. Yeah, he was. And then he was like, I'm okay. And
they didn't call the police after he died, which I was shocked by.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was weird.
I was like, oh, is everyone in this movie just dumb? And that feeling faded.
Well, that's good.
Because, you know, in some movies, people are just dumb. And that's like
Can
how
I
they
just
drive
say
the plot forward.
That I think one thing they do with Rumi, her manager, is they try and make her look ugly, you mm-hmm. know, in part so it's like a scary contrast. And they have her eyes really far apart.
This movie is just like anybody who's ugly and asymmetrical and has eyes that are far apart
They're
is
a villain,
evil.
Yeah.
Which is true.
Which is rude.
Oh, that's, yeah, that's what I meant.
Pretty people are also assholes.
Yeah. But
and killers.
The thing is Rumi was supposed to have been an idol when she was younger.
How would we have known that?
Well, they have a conversation.
Oh, yeah. She mentions, they mention that. Like,
because the agent uses her name in the third person, which is a thing in Japan. You can talk to someone directly and use their name.
Mm-hmm.
So he says, like, things are different since Rumiko, whatever, was an idol. Which, I mean, I don't know. I believe that's what it is that it's her name.
Yeah. No, well, he says something like, oh, just because, like, you couldn't become a successful idol, something like that.
Mm.
Oh. Maybe reviews in magazines were like, her eyes are far apart.
Mm. Well, I don't know. She might have been like cute when she was young.
Maybe they spread out as she got more evil.
Oh, yeah. On one hand, it is shitty to see what people might nowadays call body shaming. Or if you're listening to this and you got far apart eyes or whatever. And it is sort of a cheap shortcut in movies to just make the bad guy look
weird,
really creepy
and
stuff. But I don't know. To a degree, that's true. You know, like when you see somebody that looks that way, I mean, it's a little scary.
Mm.
And whether or not that's the right thing to feel, I mean, it's certainly effective in this movie.
Yeah.
Because you're used to seeing all the anime people look pretty and similar. And then,
but you can't judge a book by its cover.
Well, unfortunately, after seeing this movie, I feel differently. And now I only talk to pretty people. Mm. Yeah. So, you know, a really fucked up example of that is... that movie, we saw it, Jackie, The Sentinel. And at one point, like, I think a gate to hell opens and all these deformed people come out in her apartment and it's really scary. And they're all really deformed people.
Hmm.
Aww.
Which, like, I mean, I guess they got a check for it, but probably not a very good one. It was controversial even at the time in the 70s.
Hmm.
Moving on. So she becomes an actress, but then she...
She only has, like, small parts, right now.
Well,
you
it's
know,
just this one TV
out,
show.
It's only
out.
One.
Yeah.
But then in order to get further into it, they ask her to do more and more
sexually
smuttiness.
Yeah, explicit. Yeah.
There's a rape scene.
Yes. There's a rape scene that's uncomfortable as fuck to watch, mm-hmm. Despite it being animated.
But she really commits.
She does really commit. I'm sure in a scene like that, which, by the way, I don't think it would have been... I don't know. I don't think a big, like, major TV show would shoot a scene like that way.
Maybe it's not TV. Maybe it's HBO.
Oh.
It's HBO.
It's a web series. That explains it. No, usually they do a thing with nudity called a closed set, which, according to Olivia Wilde, is, like, not ever really closed. She was saying in an interview. But at least there's, like, fewer people on set. And if they were shooting, like... close-ups of just the two actors or one of like just her, they wouldn't have all the extras still actually there standing around screaming and shit. It was like clearly she wouldn't have to be acting that much because you could just be fucking horrified and sad at that whole scene that just looks almost like the real thing, really. I mean, how removed could it really be?
And that's why it sort of bleeds into her real life.
Right. So whoever was responsible for that shoot should be fired.
Get the name of the director.
All right, I've got it. It's Mark DeVries. Oh, no! Reality.
Your eyes are spreading apart.
Yeah, so before that, they were like, okay, now you're going to do a rape scene. And she was like, I don't know. And like, her
manager's dead set.
Rumi was like, oh, no. She's a, like, because, like, if you're a pop idol, you have to be, like, nice and cutesy and like innocent.
You maintain an image.
But she goes for it. She goes, I'm an actress now. This is what I have to do. The only thing I'm worried about is like my parents will hate it, but
yeah.
It's not like I'm really getting raped.
Right. So she was fine with it because she's committing to the actress thing. But then after it happens, she kind of is like crying in her room like, of course I didn't want to do it. I just thought I had to in order to, I couldn't say no because I want to be an actress. So if I say no, I guess it's a sign that I'm not committed to this.
I mean, and we see, you know, her agent kind of pushing for her to be in the show more.
Mm-hmm.
So they do like believe in her and they're banking on her, of course.
Yeah. I think she thought like if she said no, she wouldn't be able to be on the show anymore. And then like, what does she do? You know, but now it's like.
Which is a very real thing.
Because she did do it. Now she can never go back to being a pop idol because they like.
She's tarnished.
They have to have a very clean reputation. They're not even allowed to date. If they're dating, they have to keep it a secret. But if it gets out, they're not allowed in the group anymore.
You're saying in real Japan, it's like that now?
Well, I don't know about like when and whatever, but I know that like for the most part, they're like sometimes it's part of their contract that they're not allowed to have a boyfriend.
Like yeah. Jedi,
you try and stop me.
Well, it's because you know they want their fans to like fall in love with them and stuff.
No, it makes total sense, and I do think that celebrities in this day and age also do try and keep that a little bit under wraps.
Yeah,
it's just not.
It depends on if it works for their image or not. You know,
right. You love those pop stars that are serial monogamists,
right?
You know, you're like, I love songs about how I just can't stop being in relationships, and everybody knows.
Not too many songs about that.
It's time to start writing. Because when you're in really...
Beyonce was like, getting there, and then Jay-Z fucked up, and now they're okay.
Yeah, sure he did. It's a publicity stunt.
Come on!
Good on them for like creating that storyline and stuff. No, really, it made like a whole project and everything, regardless.
Two whole projects.
Okay.
Actually, three.
What are you talking
about? They did
about?
Lemonade, Jay-Z had his album, and then they had the album together.
Four if you include... four, five, six if you include their children.
Okay,
their children do count.
So the movie gets more and more fucked up with a fan of some kind or multiple fans indicating to her, like her blog, it starts pretending to be her saying, I'm gonna be an idol again, I don't want to act anymore.
Yeah, they made me do it, help, like I didn't want to do this rape scene, they're making me do it, help.
And then people start getting murdered.
So the first thing we see is that bomb going off at the agent. She does a photo shoot where she gets full ass naked as well.
Why did she do that?
She
didn't have to do that naked photo shoot.
Maybe she wanted to do it.
I guess she didn't seem remorseful about that.
Well, I mean that might be part of her career is like and the promotion is like watch this show and you'll see this in motion.
I see.
It's like promotional.
Ugh,
like that's
gross.
That's who her agency got her in with. And that's also a real thing. I forget the name of the photographer in the United States, but his name is like Terry something. He does
Terry Richardson.
Is that who it is with all the Polaroids? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he's known for getting the ladies to get naked.
He's known for it.
And there's been a few of them who are like, nah, I didn't really want to do that. It's pretty fucky.
But let's not assume that she didn't have any agency in this decision.
Yeah,
I'm just
like
saying that her former co-cham people are like, isn't he known for getting people to take it off?
Yeah.
So to me, it's a little bit implied that, you know, that he pries women to take their clothes off.
So he dies.
Oh, yeah, he died. Well, first, the writer of the show dies.
Yeah, he dies in a parking garage, and he walks into an elevator, and there's a radio playing pop music, and he goes in, and then the elevator opens, and he's dead.
He's got no eyes.
Aw.
Voice actor for that writer, by the way, Will Zeppeli from JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, Phantom Blood.
Love it.
So Mr. Mehmeta himself got his eyes ripped out.
Iconic roles, both of them.
Yeah.
Iconic roles.
It matches up with Will Zeppeli getting his body ripped off by some chains.
His head got ripped off.
No, he got cut in half.
Mm.
Yeah. It was the worst case of someone being cut in half that I've ever seen. You ever see Dewey Cox?
Yes.
Yeah.
Great movie. Underrated.
Underrated.
Still underrated, even though we keep saying it's underrated.
Yeah. Pop Star is also very good. Yeah, so people start dying. It's pretty gruesome. She's getting naked. We're getting all this viscera.
And meanwhile, she's like losing it because she's like seeing, like, because like basically after the rape scene, like she starts seeing herself as a, like, before, like kind of as her pop idol personality, like as her fans see her.
Mm-hmm.
And she's always wearing the same outfit from the performance we see.
Yeah, she kind of looks like a ballerina pixie person. Like, it's very like floofy,
right? Which is what Black Swan is about, ballerinas.
Okay. It's not the same.
But it's not
It's not the same. I mean, there's also just like one or two shots that are ripoffs, you know. But anyway, and Darren Aronofsky owns the rights to
homage Mark
certain you know, scenes.
Anyway,
so whatever.
So she starts seeing herself and hallucinating that, and she's hallucinating a bunch of shit like in between. Like there's times when you're like, did that happen? Did that not happen? Is she dreaming that? It's a lot of like that stuff.
And the way that it's edited, we as viewers sometimes don't know, okay, are we watching her, a nightmare, or one of her one of her scenes where they're shooting for her show? And sometimes the show changes the name that they're not talking about her character. They use her real name as an actress. And so watching it, you're like, okay, is this just her dissociating while filming, or is this a total nightmare? There's that whole sequence where you hear the director say, take two, and then it's the second day. And she thinks that it's a repeat of the last day.
Yeah, she keeps imagining she's getting hit by a truck, and it doesn't really happen.
Yeah.
Does she get hit by the truck?
By the way.
Uh-huh.
The other actress in that one scene where she can't stop freaking out and she ruins the take.
Yeah.
It's like the second day and it's like take one and the actress is like, I'm going to have nightmares about this line. I want to be like, you know, why don't you be supportive? This is take one.
She's a pro.
Okay.
She's a one take star.
She's one take Juanita.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Also when the photographer got killed? The photographer got killed in his apartment. Do we talk about that yet?
Yeah, she imagines that she... Well, I don't know.
Like she knew that happened, you know?
No, she didn't.
Well, she wakes up from a dream as if she like knew that he was killed or something.
Right.
And she imagines that she finds the bloody clothes in her closet.
What? I don't think that she imagines that. Here's my take on that.
And after watching it again now, whatever you're about to say, I think I agree with you.
I think Rumi did it. And the reason why we see... Mima is because Rumi thinks of herself as Mima, as her client.
Mm.
And then when she visited Mima that same day or the day before, she stashed the bloody clothes there.
And also, I think that Rumi is the one that's writing the blog.
Oh, yeah. I think so, too, because she knows specific details down to recording her and stuff.
I think Rumi is the one writing the blog. And we know that she writes to Mimania, who
is unfortunately,
the janitor guy,
ugly looking guy who is a real stalker. He's not a red herring.
Yeah.
Because I kind of forget that in between the movie.
Yeah.
You know? I'm like, oh, yeah, the manager is pretending to be an old version of her. And it's like, yeah, but she's also telling a stalker
Yeah, she's telling the stalker, meanwhile, that that Mima isn't the real Mima, and that, you know, you need to kill her in order for the real Mima to be able to perform. By the way, fun fact, because like watching this and like knowing now, like, because, you know, I watched this once before, and the one thing that I remember is that her manager, Rumi, is obsessed and
oh, yeah,
a little crazy. Wait, do you know what I'm about to say? No, you don't.
Selena.
How'd you know I was going to say that?
Because I feel the same way.
Okay. Yeah, watching it now, I'm like, it reminds me of Selena. And then I looked it up and there's actually a connection. So the woman who plays, the woman who does the voice of Rumi.
Rika Matsumoto.
Rika Matsumoto is, she, that same voice actress played Selena in the Japanese dub of the film. So when they dubbed the Selena movie, she was the voice of that, which is ironic because in real life, Selena Quintanilla, she was murdered by her, the president of her fan club, who was very close to her and the family. The president of the fan club killed Selena because she was like stealing money from her, and she was also obsessed with her. So it is interesting.
Please don't murder us, fans.
Yeah.
The movie itself also, between the manager and Mima herself, the star, pop star, they're both dissociating in different ways. I mean, one, Mima is sort of like, in a true sense, being gaslit, I think, here, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, some of it, it seems like she is just losing her mind, because you're like, wait, did Rumi really show up there and then jump out the window and stuff? You're like, what the fuck?
Mm-hmm. I think Mima is kind of being driven crazy by the fact that there's a blog that really does sound a lot like her, you know, because it turns out that it's written by someone who knows her very, very well and is playing the part in their own head. So I think that, like, because of that, and because she is, you know, doing things that she maybe didn't think that she would do, or like maybe other people think are out of character for her, and like because she's like such a public figure, I guess, like,
and we do know that we hear fans on the ground talking, and
yeah,
to some degree reception is not great,
right? I think for her, like, it's kind of blending like the way that people see her and then like who she actually is. And like, there's kind of a dissociation between how people see her and who she is, you know, or who she's trying to be.
Right. And the thing is the same for the manager, obviously. She, you know, has complete dissociative identity disorder at this point. Mm-hmm. And I think that with the way the stalker is and the whole voyeuristic appeal of like idols in Japan and worldwide, it's like all fake relationships, you know? And I think it's a commentary on our society where, you know, like, your relationships aren't real, you know, but you're led to believe they are through consumerism and celebrity worship and that sort of thing.
You mean like, I'm not really friends with Beyonce?
You're not friends with Beyonce. Okay. Do you pretend you're the driver and you have to roll up the partition?
No.
Is that who you would be?
Why would I be the driver?
I don't know. That's just what popped into my head.
In that scenario.
What if in that song, Beyonce sings the line like, roll up the partition, please. And then quietly you just hear an ad lib where someone's like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Do you think the song would be better off?
Mm-hmm.
You just hear like,
yes. No question.
Yeah, sorry. I was trying to see if the Me Mania voices anybody, but he has so few lines that it's probably not even credited.
But he tries to murder her. That's his big scene.
Yeah, and that's another thing where that's something that really happens, but we think it's a dream.
Right?
Yeah.
We think for a minute it's a dream because he disappears.
Or that it might have been part of the show because, like,
it does blur together with her actually hurting someone.
Like, at the end of that scene, there's a moment where, like, she hears cut or whatever, but then she wakes up in her bed.
Well, she hears cut, and I think they do applaud for her.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then she wakes up. So it like it goes across like three planes of reality for a moment. Also, the Me Mania stalker guy had probably the best reaction to being hit in the head with a hammer I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was a very delayed reaction.
It was delayed. I would have liked it a little bit more if he crumpled, like in Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
You love crumpling.
I honestly, Texas Chainsaw for me is like largely, I don't want to say forgettable, but man, That shot where he meets Leatherface and he hits him with a hammer and he goes limp, good stuff. By the way, more parallels to the Dio fucking around with that mayor or a congressman in the OVA, the 1993 OVA of JoJo. There's a lot of stuff like when the mayor is running between the cars and it keeps looping, there's that sort of editing to break reality.
Mm-hmm.
And it has the same effect, I think, where it's like imitating a long lens. And we see somebody running and a lot of stuff passes by in the foreground. It kind of creates this confusing effect, I think. The idea that things are just moving really fast past you and you don't know what's going on.
Do you think that explains a lot of what happens here, that somebody has the ability to stop time?
Hmm. Do you think her manager has the world?
It's possible.
Anything's possible in anime.
Yeah, okay. I think if somebody in this show has, if somebody in this movie has a stand, I think it's Rumi.
It's Rumi.
Making her see a projection of the, like, ideal Mima.
Her ideal Mima.
Her ideal Mima.
Do you guys think...
Or the fan ideal Mima.
Do you guys think it's intentional how ironic it is that her manager is named Rumi, but Mima lives in that tiny apartment that's really cramped?
No.
Like it's not Rumi in there at all?
Like it's a pun in English.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, I don't think so.
Okay, let me cross that out.
Is it... Okay, I got a different pun for you.
Got it.
Rumi, if you flip the characters, it's Miru, which means...
To watch.
To watch.
Could be.
That seems more.
Did you notice that in Black Swan her name is Nina, which is close to Mima?
Yeah, kind of.
Okay, there is a scene, and look, here's the thing. Here's why I'm mad at Aronofsky. No, it's not a ripoff. It's not. But there's clearly homages. There's that long shot in the hallway that's at an angle. There's the shot where all the photos are talking at once to Mimania, which happens in Black Swan. It's more that when interviewed, he said, no, this, you know, this was not influenced by Perfect Blue.
Oh, that's kind of garbage.
And yet the scene that I told you guys to remember where she screams in the bathtub, you know, that's Darinofsky paid like $60,000 to use that exact, those two shots in his previous movie, Requiem for a Dream. And he met Satoshi Kon. You know, I mean, it's like, come on, man. You can't say that it's influence. Even you wouldn't admit that subconsciously.
Subconsciously, at least.
So
I think it, I mean, yeah, sure. I think they. I don't know. He wouldn't admit it, or he does. I don't know. He maybe is too arrogant.
There's similarities, but like that was just what annoyed me. Is like, because I thought it would be cool for people to know about Perfect Blue, and certainly was brought up in the interview. But I mean,
can I change the topic? I have a question.
Go for it.
What the fuck happened to the fish? They were
dead. Did they die?
And then they weren't
so
dead?
So I think they died, and I think they were alive in Rumi's room.
In Rumi's room?
Do you really think there's two rooms?
Yes.
Because to me, I thought Rumi just put up her old poster and stuff.
No, I think Rumi's apartment is exactly based on Mina's apartment. Because she looked out the window, and she was like, this isn't my apartment.
Oh, you're right. The building's
a totally different building.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, that is creepy.
It's so creepy.
Mm. I thought maybe the fish died because she was busy on her new actress schedule and like didn't take care of them. And it's like an example of like,
I feel like her fish fans actually died, but Rumi's fish are still alive.
Mm. Oh,
because she's a perfect
pop
star.
I see what you're saying. Well, yeah. And she just follows the routine, the old routine. So maybe the idea is like, it's the death of her old life, her old career and old fans. But Rumi keeps that alive.
Right.
In Rumi's Rumi.
That's why... Well, I don't know.
There's also two references pretty much to Jodie Foster in this movie.
What's the other one?
It's loose, but
say
it's,
both
it's,
of
it's
them.
My interpretation.
Yeah, say both.
Okay, one is the one that I think is a connection is in the murder drama, we hear the two detectives talking and she's like, "Oh, he tears the skin off his victims because he wants to become one like a woman," which is what the killer's motivation is in Silence of the Lambs.
Buffalo Bill.
Which stars Jodie Foster.
Interesting.
And then later when
and Anthony Hopkins.
Okay.
Let's list the whole cast.
Sure. You've got those two. You've got Ted Levine as the killer. You've got, I don't know. I don't really know who else is in it.
Let's move on.
The FBI guy reminds me of somebody. And then later when they're talking about her doing the rape scene and being partially nude, he's like, Jodie, whatever her name is, did it. And that, I believe, is a reference to... The Accused, is it called?
It was like one of her first movies.
Yeah.
Really?
She's raped on a pinball machine in the beginning. And it is a reason why I've hesitated seeing it. It just sounds very upsetting.
I think she was underage when she shot that.
No. Yeah. I think that's Taxi Driver. She's definitely underage.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I'm mixing things up.
Which is weird because the fucking...
It's weird.
The guy who shot at Reagan or did hit Reagan... fell in love with her from Taxi Driver, which is fucking double gross because she was 12 in that movie.
Right. Yeah. So the other similarity, I guess, is just, like, do you think this was based on Jodie Foster a little bit? Because like there's a fan who was obsessed with her too. Yeah.
Yeah. That's another aspect of Jodie Foster. I also wrote, look, this pun doesn't quite work, but I wrote Silence of the Chams.
Pretty good. Yeah. Pretty good.
You know,
yeah.
Sounds good. You know.
Chams. That's a good group. Okay.
Cham?
I think they're a good group.
What does Cham mean?
I think it might just be like a Japanese phonetic misspelling of charm.
Mm.
Like it's Cham.
Mm.
You know? That's what I think as of right now. Let me see this here. The Accused is 1988.
She was 20 something. I did the math already. I did the same thing you're doing right
now.
Wow,
the budget is $6 million. That's nothing. And then it made 37. That's crazy.
Pretty good.
It's really good. And I mean, to be honest, I think actresses especially, doing edgier material to be taken more seriously, that is a trope.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, sure.
I don't know how successful it is, you know, on average.
Oh, it happens all the time. With like the kid from Harry Potter was like naked in a play or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, I guess now he's an adult. Now he's Daniel Radcliffe.
And I think he is successful. And yeah. Equus is a fantastic play. I have never seen it, but I have read it.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Equus is fucked up. It's cool.
Okay.
And a lot of like the Disney star, like Britney Spears is a classic example. She stayed in music, but like the stuff she produced became more and more adult as she went on.
Well, she was from the beginning though.
That's true.
We pretend it wasn't, but she was very much like basically what porn stars do, the sexy schoolgirl thing.
That's true. Like, I knew what she was.
Like her photo shoots are like, ooh, look at me, I'm a sexy baby.
Yeah. Teen Miles knew what she was doing and liked it.
Yep. Boy, yeah. But there are some stars that, what are some stars that we know of that did go on to do more sexy stuff?
I feel like there's a very good example, but I'm not thinking of it right now.
Our theory is completely full of
bullshit.
We need to think of an example.
There's a ton of them.
Where are they?
I don't know. Like Macaulay Culkin grew up and like did blow in some movie, right?
Party Monster.
Party Monster. But that wasn't like that was like he came back
as
an adult. I'm thinking of someone who did doing music or
they
whatever.
They did Harry Potter and then they went and then they were naked.
Right.
Okay.
I'm trying to think. Fuck.
I
mean, Lindsay Lohan did...
Yes,
have
Lindsay
an
Lohan
image change.
Is a great one.
She got, like, not quite naked, but she got nakeder in some stuff.
Miley Cyrus,
oh, yeah. She had a pretty big shift. But I'm trying to think of something where they become an actor and they do sexy-ish stuff. That is getting more and more specific.
Sexy-ish stuff.
I think there might just be examples of actresses that did, like, a sexier role or whatever, just to sort of boost their... careers or whatever, which is fine, by the way. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think it's up to the actress. As long as it's up to the actress, then it's fine. Actresses who did sexual stuff. No.
Are you looking? Is that what you just Googled?
It was a mistake.
I see.
Everything is Harvey Weinstein. That's like all the Google results were, and I wish that wasn't in my history. It didn't work either. So... Yeah, so the movie reflects reality in a lot of ways while the characters are out of touch with it. Whoa. That pretty much is the thrust of it. And there's like a lot of subtle hints towards what the movie is about in the beginning, and there's a lot of great nuance, but at the same time, this movie hits you in the face with a sledgehammer of its message, and I like it. I think it's great how much it's like, this is a problem with our society. Mm. Look how fucked up this all is. Are you confused yet? Do you see these parallels? It's just not afraid to do that. And I like it.
I like it too.
I like it. I like it and it made me feel bad.
That's what I wanted.
Why do you feel bad, Miles?
It just made me feel disturbed.
What did you do?
I don't want to tell you.
Did you get down with the sickness?
Yeah.
That's how disturbed you were?
listen, I wrote a lot of letters to the actress from Murder, She Wrote back in the day.
Angela Lansbury?
Yeah, and when she retired, I murdered her.
Oh.
Is she alive?
Angela Lansbury? I don't know. Did anyone Lansbury her? Oof. 6 feet deep?
That's pretty good.
Angela, this is now the Google show.
But like, I don't know, people get so mad at like when the ships that did not work out in Star Wars, like people feel ownership over famous people in an unhealthy way.
Do you feel like it's become old hat at this point? Is that just my perspective? Or do you think like other people are realizing like, oh yeah, there's just outrage all the time over what TV and movies do?
Well, there is outrage all the time in general. Is it old hat? I think so.
There's also so many TV shows and stuff now that I don't think too many people can really focus on one thing. I don't know. I could be wrong. But I feel like there's so much now that you can't feel as much of a link to it. Like, I heard the third season of 13 Reasons Why is, like, just god-awful, the one that came out last year.
Probably, I don't know.
But at this point, it's like, what? It's season three? There's new shows. I don't need to care about that.
The first season was, like, okay. It was worth watching. And then after that, I was like, what? No. I feel like I've watched something, and, like, recently, like, I feel like I'm always watching things and then being like, oh, I don't like what they're doing to their character. I'm going to stop watching, you know?
We've talked about this. I don't like TV. I watch a good amount of it.
Yeah, usually after it goes on for a while, it's like they get different writers, or they try to spice things up, or they try to, like, make more plot happen, and then it's like, this doesn't make any sense for the character development. And
right. Like, Twin Peaks is the classic example.
Actually, a great example is Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones, they kind of rushed.
Yeah, they ran out of the source.
They skipped some character development and tried to rush through plot stuff. And like the characters were like the big drawing.
Well, they didn't have the material anymore. He didn't write enough.
Well, yeah, but they are still like writers that know how to write things. Like they could have. Yes. They could have. What they were trying to do was put some pieces together.
I'm just saying that is a large part of it. And we've talked about how they capitalize on the manga by making a series before the series is over. Yeah. And then they make a better anime. Once everything's done.
But the, you know, fans were upset with what was done there.
With Game of Thrones.
People were outraged. Oh, the same thing with Eva.
Actually,
were outraged.
Another great example is Star Wars. People were pissed about The Last Jedi, and so they decided to completely, like, fuck up this last movie to make it just boring and, like, try to make it so that, like, it this movie can't piss anyone off because it's what fans want.
They act at a archival footage of an actress that has been dead for years. And they're just like, here's a weird flashback sequence to explain this new thing. And
let's disregard everything that happened in the last movie.
Four glaring examples of being like, no, Last Jedi or whatever it was.
Last Jedi was better.
That didn't happen. No. Here it is. Well, this movie would have been good if it wasn't so obvious when they were doing that heavy lifting. Mm-hmm. No. Here's a new love interest. I don't know.
Let's cut out any characters that were important in the last one.
Yeah.
Anyway,
this has been Star Wars Pod.
This is why it's good to just make one good thing and then walk away.
Or just like, fuck the fans. Do the thing that, you know, artistically you think is the right thing to do.
If the fans were the artists, they would be the artists.
Right.
Yeah.
That's why we don't listen to you, you stupid listeners.
Unless you give us $20.
That's right. We'll listen to you if you give us $20.
Yeah.
But also,
cash.
It's like a subset of fans, too, because like plenty of people also liked it. I loved The Last Jedi. So it was. Just
I thought it was pretty good.
A loud subset of fans that were like, "Well, I don't. It's not what I want Star Wars to be."
I'm a big Rian Johnson fan.
Yeah.
I was disappointed by Knives Out.
Oh, I didn't see it.
Oh yeah, Knives Out was. It was. It's worth watching, but I have problems with it. That's how I feel. It is clever.
By the way, Satoshi Kon, if you didn't know, died 10 years ago.
No.
Yeah, he died in 2010. He was working on a movie. He had pancreatic cancer.
Let's watch more of his movies. Why don't we do that?
We should. I would rewatch Paprika.
Let's do Paprika.
I felt underwhelmed by it.
I don't remember it. Did I see it?
We watched it. Okay. I think I expected more Perfect Blue for some reason. I haven't seen Millennium Actress. We haven't seen, people have talked about, I think, Tokyo Godfathers. I believe that's him as well.
Let's watch them.
And Aronofsky wrote a thing about Satoshi Kon after he passed away. He wrote a eulogy, which is very nice.
He's like, I'm going to steal all of your ideas now. R.I.P.
He's like, he's like, rest in peace, Mr. Kon. Also, Black Swan was a completely original idea I thought up. I did not see your movie at that time. I have to go. And then he made Mother.
Mother.
He made Mother.
That was an interesting movie.
The full title of that movie was Motherfucker, and then they had to cut
Come
it.
Come on. No way. Get out of here.
It definitely was not.
Mark, no way.
Mother was okay.
It was okay. It was interesting.
It was interesting.
It was another boring. Example of like...
In the middle, it got boring, I think, or towards the end.
I had an interpretation of that movie, and then there's an interview where he blatantly is like, no, it's a metaphor for Mother Earth. And I was like, I don't like this movie as much. Apparently, I was wrong.
I don't agree with it.
I was wrong, but I enjoyed it before I knew that you had a dumber idea than what I did.
I feel like everybody's making like climate change movies now.
I mean... It's on a lot of our minds.
Yeah.
Not enough, am I right?
Well,
it is like 67 degrees here in New Jersey on January.
Why is it so hot?
We're going to get rid of our Keurig machine.
This winter has been so warm.
What?
We're going to get rid of our Keurig machine.
Get some reusable pods.
I hate those though. I'd rather have reusable filter or something.
You going to switch to French press?
No. Still drip.
No.
I stay drip.
Going to get your own grinder?
Yep, it's actually in the lobby.
Grinding.
It was delivered today. Yeah, it's a tribute to the clips.
You're gonna do pour over?
No, I'm not gonna do pour over or French press.
Why?
Because that takes effort. That's actually why I don't like the reusable Keurig pods. Well, one of the reasons is like cleaning out this tiny dumb thing each time you want a cup of coffee sucks. Plus, it's like the water just goes every fucking direction. It's not even.
Each cup of coffee is perfect if you pour it over.
Well, speaking of Japanese things, pour over. They invented it. There's a place in the East Village that does it.
Let's go.
It's got long lines on the weekends.
Oh, wait. There's a lot of places that do it.
Well, it's Japanese run. It's on
St.
Mark's or something that is a lot of...
Anyway.
Okay.
I think we're done with this episode.
We may be done with this episode.
Yay.
The movie, it's good. It's spooky if you like scary stuff.
You should watch it.
It's a great exercise, I think, in terms of... what anime as a medium can be, editing.
We're talking to people that have already seen it or that wants to be spoiled.
No, there's definitely people listening who are like, fuck that, it's already on. I don't have any other podcast to listen to.
Well,
I expect 90 minutes of JJB pod.
Well, we spoiled the whole thing, so now there's no point.
We have not spoiled the whole thing. And
okay.
We have spoiled the whole
thing. I think you could still watch it if you listen to this, but like you should have just watched it before we spoiled it.
Jackie's a big into our podcast telling people you shouldn't have done that.
You shouldn't have done it. Mm-mm.
You fucked up. You shouldn't have gone to college for that major. Regret everything.
Yeah.
Anyway, again, please subscribe to our Patreon. You can just give us a fucking dollar. It's patreon.com/JJBpod. Feel free to write to us your thoughts. Tell us if you just decided to listen to this podcast without watching the movie so we can spank you. It's jojosbizarrepod@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter @JJBpod. And by the way, I, Mark, hello. Might just start streaming games and shit on the twitch.tv/JJBpod channel. We didn't really use it for a long time, in part because I was like, no, we should make it related to JoJo. And
should
blah,
I
blah,
stream
blah.
My football manager?
Please do.
Games?
Please do.
I won't say a word.
And I'm just going to stream whatever the fuck I happen to feel like playing.
I have watched Football Manager streams, by the way.
But just go to twitch.tv/JJBpod if you want to see hiring and firing decisions that Miles makes for soccer.
Mm-hmm. Telling people to train as a wingback or a fullback.
Wow.
Big call.
Anyway, have a fucked up week, everyone.
Come on.
Bye.
Thank you so much to our Patreon subscribers. You guys are good.
Yeah.
Rest of you are good, too.
Well, yeah. The Patreon subscribers don't have to have a fucked up week. But everyone else, you know what you did.
It means a lot.
Bye.
Bye. She loves